And fortunate as we are with the priceless commodity of your beauty. Purport, the mentality of the demons is, in being enamored by the false beauty of this material world is expressed herein. The demoniac can pay any price for the skin beauty of this material world. They work very hard all day and night, but the purpose of their hard work is to enjoy sex life. Sometimes they misrepresent themselves as karma yogis, not knowing the meaning of the word yoga. Yoga means to link up with the Supreme Personality of Godhead or to act in Krishna consciousness. A person who works very hard, no matter in what occupation, and who offers the results of the work to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is called a karma yogi. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Purushottaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanavane Namaste Sarasvatim Deve Gauravani Bhacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Bhaskadya De Sitarane. As usual, the Bhagavatam is criticizing a certain conception of life. That conception is the mode of passion. The demons represent the mode of passion, while the Rakshashas represent the mode of ignorance, and the devotees represent the mode of goodness. Devotion begins when one is free from the lower modes of nature, especially passion and ignorance. Therefore, here it says that freedom from the lower modes of nature means that one should not be attached to the results of the work. One cannot be called an honest person if he's always intent on stealing. To say that a thief is an honest thief is a contradiction in words. So as long as we're in the material world, intent on either lording it over the material nature, controlling it, with the attempt to enjoy it, we can't be considered honest persons. Therefore, there is no question, as it mentions here, of being a yogi if one is intent on sense gratification. Idahinendriyarteshu, nakarmas vana sajate, sarva sankalpa sanyasi, yoga rudas vitochate. A person is said to be elevated in self-realization, and it's called a yogi. One is called a yogi when he renounces the desire for sense gratification, and he's not attracted to fruitive activities. This takes a little bit of knowledge to realize that, as Krishna says in another part, yehi samsparshya bhoga, Dukha yone evate adyantavanta konteya na te shu ramate buddha. That an intelligent person doesn't take part in the sources of misery, which are due to contact with the senses, with their objects. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise person does not delight in them. So ramate buddha. It's not that one will not experience what is called material happiness and material distress, but this ramate, delighting in it, getting overly exciting about it, putting too much emphasis on it as if it's the ultimate purpose or the only purpose of life. So the demons, because they're lost to themselves, therefore they don't actually know who they are or what their purpose of life is or how to achieve it. They take too much emphasis, they put too much emphasis upon this fruitive activities and sense gratification, not realizing that whatever they can get from that fruitive activities and sense gratification is tuchava, and is insignificant. That even the highest attraction in the material world, as mentioned here, that the demons hold as sacred, especially I guess in places like France, it's practically their religion. That sex is the highest principle of the material world, but compared to the spiritual principle, is considered tuchava, or insignificant. Or as Ramanacharya he prays, Idavadi mama cheta krishna padara vinde nava navarasa daman yujitam rantumasi tadavadi vatasmarane sangamane bhavati mukha vikara shusti nistivanam cha. That as soon as one tastes the actual beauty of Krishna consciousness, then material happiness, especially in the form of sex life, seems insignificant. Because compared to material sex life, material happiness, there is no attraction. It is said that when Brahma created man, man was bored. He had nothing to do. He didn't want to stay around because there was nothing to do here. Therefore, he had to create a woman also to keep him engaged. So this idea of material happiness, which is the highest principle in the mode of passion, and when one indulges in it, one falls in the mode of ignorance, and one forgets everything about what happiness is, what proper activity is, what the purpose of life is, what reality is. In the mode of ignorance, one can't understand anything in its proper perspective. As a matter of fact, in the mode of ignorance, one will take knowledge as being ignorance, and one will take ignorance as knowledge. Therefore, yoga begins with karma yoga. Prabhupada mentions karma yoga means here that one should understand that there is a God. There is no question of yoga without God. And that God is the owner of everything. God, by definition, must be the owner of everything. Otherwise, how is he God? If he's just another person like we are, struggling to hold on to this material, his possessions, or trying to get something, then why is he any better than we are? And he's the owner of everything, therefore everything belongs to him, and unless we utilize things for him, then we get entangled in the modes of nature. As soon as we want to enjoy things independently from Krishna, we get entangled in the modes of nature, and therefore, instead of becoming yogis, we become bogies, or rogis. Bogi is one who's trying to enjoy, and after trying to enjoy, generally one becomes a rogi, or diseased, bewildered, confused, morose, etc. Therefore, as explained here, one should understand things properly. That yoga begins with karma yoga, offering the results of one's work to the Supreme. Of course, even better than karma yoga is jnana yoga. Shreya dravya maya jagna jnana jagna purantapa sarvam karmi kalam partha jnani parisamapyate. That the sacrifice of work is greater, the sacrifice of knowledge is greater than the sacrifice of work, because after all, son of Kunti, the sacrifice of work culminates in transcendental knowledge. We can sacrifice our work to the Supreme, offer the results to Krishna, but there still may be, unless there is some knowledge, actually what we're doing, then it doesn't really yield a transcendental result. We can sacrifice the work and hope to get something in return. We may not express it openly, but as long as we're not in knowledge, then we'll hope for some better result. Everyone is engaged in sacrifice. People are sacrificing whatever energy they have, and they hope by their sacrifice they'll get something in return. Unfortunately, most people make a sacrifice in the mode of ignorance or passion. Current society is supposed to be mostly in the mode of passion. So people are working hard to get money in order to enjoy their senses. So this is certainly a passion activity. More and more money for more and more sense gratification, which results in greed, and greed, as we know, results in misery, unhappiness. And because we're unhappy, because we're in ignorance, therefore we do things which are foolish, and the result is we become more foolish. Therefore, knowledge is required by karma yoga, offering the results to Krishna. There's a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of renunciation. but it's not very great. And therefore, the karma yogis generally, even though they know, as Prabhupada said, they know that the goal is Krishna, but they're addicted to the results of their work. They're addicted to enjoy the results of their work. And that's karma yoga. And the neophyte devotee, they know the goal is Krishna. They offer some activities to Krishna, some sacrifice, but generally they're thinking, I'm in distress, I want to get free from distress, I want some material remuneration, I want some security, I want some intelligence, how to live more happily in the world here, or I want to get out of the world. So these results for the neophyte devotee, the karma yogi, he gets the results, but he's not very intelligent enough. He thinks that the end of yoga is these results. And therefore he gets the results and tries to enjoy these results and winds back in distress or insecure or in ignorance or want, etc. He becomes back in the same position almost that he was when he started. And therefore again he goes to God to pray for help. And then again God reciprocates, Krishna reciprocates. Again he thinks, let me enjoy the results. Therefore one needs some knowledge, real knowledge, that this is not the purpose of yoga. This temporary cessation of material demands, the fulfillment of material desires, and then again demanding something from God, from Krishna. One needs knowledge that I am not this body, realization that we're not this body, not simply theoretical knowledge, but actual experience that I'm a soul. Therefore, the soul needs some happiness, and happiness that is born out of contact with the material senses with their objects will not satisfy the soul. Therefore, the soul needs some activity, the soul needs some nourishment, it needs some encouragement, and that begins with Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga means to become aware of things as they really are so that we can see what we're doing. In Karma Yoga, there's a little knowledge. In Jnana Yoga, we're actually looking around, trying to see what's going on and where I fit in, what my purpose is, and what I'm supposed to be doing under different circumstances. Therefore, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, for instance, Idam, Sri Bhagavan Vacha, Parambuya, Param Gyanam Vacha, Parambuya, Pravakshami, Gyanam Gyanam Uttama, Yajgyatamunya Sarve, Param Siddhim Uto Vitaha. That the Munis, when they hear the knowledge in the 14th chapter, that helps them greatly to obtain liberation, the three modes of nature. Because with this little bit of knowledge, we can see what mode of nature I'm acting in. The purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is not to explain to us how to act in a mode of goodness or how to get out of modes of ignorance and passion, although that's preliminary. But at least preliminary knowledge we should have, even if because we haven't perfectly understood that we're not the body, nor the mind, nor are we aloof from our material conceptions of life. Therefore, we have to learn how to watch what conception of life is running through my mind and judge it, whether it's true or not true, whether it's real or unreal, where does it fit in? Is it in the mode of goodness? Is it real knowledge? Is it born out of the mode of passion? Or is it born out of the mode of ignorance? And then, apuryamana machala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti adva tava kama yam pravishanti sarve sa shanti matnoti na kama kami. Viewing these thoughts, feelings, some of us it's thoughts, ideas, and other it's feelings. Ah, that feeling, the feeling's there, I can't get rid of it, I don't want to get rid of it. It's a feeling, it's my feeling. It's not an ordinary feeling, it's my feeling. Whatever the scriptures say, it's me. Just like if you have some old socks, they don't smell very well. But if they're your socks, you may like them. You know, oh, it's So it's my feeling. No sense of judging my feeling. It's mine. You don't want to lessen your self-image. That may lead to depression. So you have to keep up your self-image. And so it's my feeling, my thought, my idea, my creation. Oh, it's my child. Whatever they do is all right because it's my child. Something is because it's connected to me. Therefore, my country, right or wrong, I love it. My whatever it is. So one has to be able to, with discrimination, be able to, even what we think is so-called mine or I, we have to be able to analyze and see where it's going to lead us. Is it going to lead me to Vaikuntha, to happiness, or it's going to lead me someplace else? And then, one has to take shelter of Krishna, because without taking shelter of Krishna, it becomes an intellectual exercise which probably won't work in the long run. Because we may be able to identify, yes, there is my feeling. It is not in Krishna consciousness. I should reject it. I should become aloof from it. But I can't. I can pretend. But if it comes up too many times, I just can't avoid it. Because that's life. Therefore, one not only has to recognize what is the feelings and the thoughts and the emotions we have, but one also has to at the same time be intelligent enough to take shelter of Krishna. If one is in the mode of goodness, one is always taking shelter of Krishna. And as soon as we stop taking shelter of Krishna, that's when all these other thoughts and emotions start arising. Oh, she loves me, she loves me not, she loves me, she loves me not. Or I hate that person. Every time I look at them, I remind of all the bad things they've ever done to me for the last, how many years, I can't remember. It seems like infinite. So as soon as we stop taking shelter of Krishna, and for most of us, it is not that thoughts of Krishna are running through our mind 24 hours a day. Therefore, sometimes we feel we're a little in Krishna consciousness, and sometimes we forget completely what Krishna consciousness is, and we start identifying ourselves completely with our mundane conception. I'm doing this, I'm feeling that, I'm thinking like that, my emotion is like so strong, I'm really feeling this. And we're not even aware. So when it gets really bad, usually when I start thinking, oh, I'm suffering, then I start, well, what to do? Well, take shelter of Krishna. Oh, now I'm happy, what to do? We should think, I should take shelter of Krishna. Although we think I'm happy, so why do I have to take shelter of Krishna? But that's Buddha Yoga. One should be able to describe, even in the mode of goodness, one has to, in the mode of goodness means that one remembers to take shelter of Krishna. And as soon as one forgets to take shelter of Krishna, that means we're in some other mode of nature. And if we're in some other mode of nature, it's not the time to think, well, I'm in some other mode of nature, I'm a rascal by nature, so why fight it? Why fight my real nature? Besides that, if I do this, I may enjoy a little bit, but I'll suffer. But I deserve to suffer because I'm a rascal. So let me do it anyhow and suffer, and later on I may become good. So that's called mind. You think I'm a good person because I'm so noble, I'm going to suffer. I'm honest at least, but a rascal I am. But I'm going to try to enjoy. Now this one has to see how the mind is going in so devious in so many different ways, and one has to give up this devious mentality, this tendency to glorify ourselves for being rascals, to think ourselves to be so honest and sensitive that we admit when we're rascals, although we don't stop being rascals, because that's me, it's part of my personality. And no one in the world is going to change it, because you know, it's a gradual process, and you know, invites psychological problems. And besides that, you know, it's not so bad, as they said. I'm not really feeling like I'm suffering, so what's the hurry? So the mind will tell us everything, but the symptom is we stop taking shelter of Krishna. Therefore, we're trying to come to a platform where it's easier to see things properly. So the beginning is karma yoga, to offer the result to Krishna. But as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, we have no result to offer to Krishna if we don't start with the most basic principle that whatever I do should be authorized. It is not that I can do whatever my mind tells me, and then if I don't like the result, I give it to Krishna. Or I offer the result to Krishna, and I try to share it myself. I start glorifying Krishna, and while I'm glorifying Krishna or working for Krishna, I think how much I'm getting in return for this glorification. How much people will glorify me. How people will think I'm nice for glorifying Krishna, for glorifying Krishna's devotees. So that's also a trick. Yes, I'll share it with Krishna and his devotees, the praise, whatever, but ultimately I want to be known as the best, the most advanced devotee. The devotee who's going around praising everyone. Everyone should love me for being so nice and advanced. I should be the most loved. So I simultaneously learn how to scratch everyone's back, and I turn my back and say, give it a scratch. Purify yourself. Hit the best back scratcher. So one has to be able to recognize all these different things. But in the beginning, we should at least come to the platform of karma yoga. Which means that whatever we're doing should be dutiful. I should be thinking that someone asked me to do it. Not that I should look around, find out what I want to do. Think, first of all, what I want to do, and then find out who will authorize it. As I mentioned before, some people, devotees, they thought karma yoga meant to find a guru or a shiksha guru will authorize what I want. So there was one initiating guru, he was eating things like ice cream and drinking 7-Up. So the devotees, they took a picture and accepted him as shiksha guru. That way they could offer their ice cream and 7-Up to him. And they had so many shiksha gurus, all the different parts of their personality that were in harmony with this particular guru. They accepted this person as shiksha guru. Therefore, whenever they wanted to do something, they simply prayed to that guru for authorization, knowing well he would give the authorization. If one is actually wants to find out what Krishna wants, then one has to do it in the proper channels. It is not that Krishna changes according to the guru. The guru is the one who is supposed to teach us what Krishna wants under all circumstances. It is not what the guru wants. He's supposed to teach us what Krishna wants. So we get the transcendental vision to understand what Krishna wants us to do, say, think, feel under all different circumstances. That's not a negation of our personality. That's the beginning of uncovering our real personality. Becoming an instrument for Krishna means that our real personality will manifest. This thinking, feeling, willing in the material world is not our personality. We're simply trying to offer it back to Krishna. Then, when we find out what Krishna wants us to do with this body, with this mind, with this intelligence, with these feelings and emotions, then offering that, that's the beginning where we reestablish our relation with Krishna. Not that this is what I'm doing, but this is what simply we're allowing Krishna to act as an instrument through us. This is how Krishna wants us to be in this material, wants his body, mind, and intelligence we have to be acting in the material world. We're simply voluntarily agreeing to it. So karma yoga means that we do something, at least it's authorized, and then whatever the results are, we don't take credit for it, we offer them to Krishna. During the activity, we may not be in Krishna consciousness, but at least we know that the results should go to Krishna, and the activity should be authorized. Then if we act in such a way, gradually we'll realize that if we want to be happy, then we have to work in consciousness of Krishna. It is not enough to offer the results to Krishna. Only by doing that one will get the intelligence gradually that we should be working in consciousness of Krishna. And that consciousness of Krishna begins with working spiritual vision. Not that I just work and work and work and work and I have no vision what I'm doing. I don't know who I'm dealing with. I forget that we're dealing with devotees. I forget I'm preaching to an innocent person. I forget that I'm dealing with Krishna's energy. I'm just working according to my own conception of life that I've acquired from the three modes. No, we have to offer the results of Krishna, but if we want to stay even on that platform, we have to gradually develop a transcendental vision while we're working so that we refine our yoga. It goes to the platform of Jnana Yoga. That also includes Karma Yoga. It's not that I'm a Jnani now. I see everything clearly, therefore I don't work anymore for Krishna. I don't offer the results. Why should I offer the results to Krishna? Now that I have knowledge, I don't have to offer the result. Now they belong to me. No, as soon as one thinks like that, one immediately falls down from the platform of knowledge. Yeah, Karma Yoga has a little knowledge, and Jnana Yoga has the same knowledge, but increases a little bit more. So one starts to work as if others are actually Krishna's servants. One is able to discriminate. That second class platform, that's the platform we're trying to come to, Madhyama Adhikara, some factual discrimination so that we can gradually understand that the object of our work is to please Krishna, to love Krishna, to make friends with the devotees, to help the innocent, and to avoid the atheistic persons, even within our mind, atheistic, demoniac conceptions. Then one can come to the first class platform of Bhakti Yoga. Anyabhilasita shunyam jnana karmina ravritam anukulena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uchate. That uttama bhakti means to actually love Krishna. Not only intellectually, physically working, but working with the soul actually loving Krishna. So that will come out, that will manifest itself by the following process properly. But the main thing is this mode of passion or ignorance, of which the demoniac mentality of trying to enjoy the material world is very prominent, as we heard a couple of days ago, telling us Kandavakana Maharaja's class. Mode of passion is very prominent. Therefore, generally when the devotees have difficulty, it's not because they're attracted to go to McDonald's. I never heard of a devotee falling down because he couldn't restrain himself from going and eating meat. Generally, or gambling. Very rarely is anyone so attracted to gambling. Mental speculation, maybe, but not gross gambling. Or intoxication may be attractive, but generally the real impetus behind the material world is thinking ourselves to be, as I mentioned many times, Romeo or Juliet or Tarzan or Jane or something, Radha and Krishna. So this idea that I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, has manifested itself specifically in that way in the material world. Because it's natural. We've come here to imitate Krishna, and that's Krishna's activities. Therefore, one has to be careful, especially in those relationships. That's the Vedic culture. It's very cautious about the intermingling between men and women. Western culture, or there is no Western culture. Western culture means animal life. The animals don't really have a culture. They have a way of cooperating with each other for sense gratification, but culture means to cooperate with each other to get free from sense gratification. As I mentioned before, when Gandhi was in England, he was asked, what did he think of English civilization? And his reply was, I think it would be a good idea. So that could apply to practically any country in the world, including most of India nowadays. But the idea is that the basic principle of culture is that men and women have to be very careful in their dealings with each other, or else lust will arise, which is the antithesis of Vedic culture. Vedic culture is meant to get free from lust, anger, and greed. If there's lust, then there will become greed. And if there's greed, there will be anger. And from anger will come illusion, bewilderment. And one will certainly act in such a way as to degrade oneself even further. Therefore, Vedic culture is meant to regulate activities in such a way as that gradually become free from them. So Prabhupada was lenient. He understood that regulation is the most basic principle. You can't get people to elevate themselves unless they can regulate themselves. Therefore, he was relatively lenient about the interactions. But those interactions between men and women should be simply based on devotional service. He said the ladies are dancing, the men are dancing with each other. What's the difficulty? Because they're dancing in Krishna consciousness. But if they're dancing with another mentality, that won't be very auspicious. So the interactions have to be based upon the proper consciousness and service to the Sankirtan movement. Otherwise, if we think, oh, Prabhupada is very lenient, I can act as if I'm Tarzan or Jane, I don't really have to think about this, that it's all going to come naturally, I'll just advance in devotional service, it's all kind of like a natural, spontaneous process. Well, it's not a natural, spontaneous process. When we're conditioned by the material energy, it works the opposite. As soon as we start becoming so-called natural and spontaneous, we'll wind up like the hogs in Vrindavan on that natural and spontaneous platform. So one has to be very careful to follow as much as possible the actual culture. One has to understand what the culture is, then try to follow it the best one can. And then gradually one will, the refinement will come so that one will actually think and see everyone equally. Like Shukadeva Goswami, he was a brahmachari, naked, just born out of the womb, 16-year-old brahmachari walking down the road, and all these naked women were bathing in the lake. And they didn't cover themselves because they saw he was as innocent as a child. But later on, his father, running after Shukadeva Goswami, passed by, and all the ladies immediately covered themselves. And Vyasadeva was saying, well, I see everyone as a spirit soul too. Why did you cover yourself? And they said, well, because you're playing the part of a householder, therefore you have to be able to discriminate between men and women. Otherwise, how can you be a householder? Therefore, we should not imitate Shukadeva Goswami, pretending that we see men and women equally. That type of imitation will simply lead to degradation. Instead, we should take the part of Vyasadeva, at least, and properly deal with men and women. It is not that properly dealing with men and women means that one party will try to exploit the other. That's improper dealing. That means real affection, real relationships, real love, real proper harmony and peace will come when we follow the culture. It's not when we don't follow the culture. This so-called affection and love in the material world, based upon material desires, is a manifestation of one's desire to exploit the other, not to actually protect the other. We shouldn't take example from demons in this current demoniac culture because it's simply leading to destruction. Instead, we should try to institute the Vedic culture what, as it's appropriate according to time, place, and audience, so that gradually we can make progress towards actually becoming Krishna conscious. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Nishkam Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. Well, generally there's, as according to Srimar and me, where I guess people have become interested in what the yoga ladder is. It starts usually with Vikarma, then we work up to Karma, then we get to Karma Yoga, or Jnana, then Karma Yoga, then Jnana Yoga, then Bhakti Yoga. So Bhakti Yoga is really Nishkam Karma Yoga. But Nishkam Karma Yoga could be either in Brahman realization, Paramatman realization, or Bhagavan realization. The work of knowledge, or action is the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, action in Krishna consciousness. So that action could be with knowledge in Brahman or Paramatman or Bhagavan. But we take Nishkam Karma Yoga, or action in Krishna consciousness, as action in consciousness of Krishna, with full knowledge of Krishna. Especially that everything here is, belongs to Krishna, everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure, and I'm supposed to please Krishna, that's for my interest and everyone else's interest. So that's Nishkarma Karma Yoga, or action in Krishna consciousness. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.